It's Central Time. I'm Dean Knetter, in for Rob Ferret. You're with us on the Ideas Network. Coming up, it's Food Friday, and we'll be embracing the flour power. We'll talk about all things bread baking, including picking out which flour to use and how to maintain that sourdough starter. First, it is back to school season as parents are getting their children ready for the return to the classroom. For some, it can be difficult to drop off and say goodbye each morning. And for others, it might be a secret relief after a summer of all-day supervision. Parenting is hard, and we've developed a culture around parenting in the U.S. that's often high pressure and high stakes. Our guest today has a new book out looking at how that parenting culture has changed over time and how we can navigate it. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What has your experience with parenting been like? What are some of the biggest positives and negatives? Do you raise your children differently than your parents raised you? And if you don't have kids, what do you think about the culture around parenting? Are you a little intimidated by it, or are you excited to have kids of your own? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Andrew Bomback is an associate professor of medicine at Columbia University Medical Center. He's the author of the new book, Long Days, Short Years, A Cultural History of Modern Parenting. Dr. Bomback, welcome to Central Time.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited for this discussion.
One of the first big points you make in your book is about the word parent itself. You note that these days we can use parent as a verb, but that was only the case beginning in about the 1970s. Why was that an interesting sort of starting point for you to look into?
So actually, the first use of parent as a verb, according to the dictionaries, was the 1950s, but for about 20 years, it wasn't really used. And it was really, as you said, in the 70s, when people started to talk about parenting as a verb. And now the use of parent as a verb actually exceeds the use of parent as a noun. And to me, that's interesting because it really signifies a shift in the way people feel about raising kids. It's no longer just, being a parent, like a role that you're sort of growing into. It's rather a skill that you have to work at. And by making parenting a verb, it implies that you should be working at it and you can be doing a better job than you're doing just by putting more and more work and in many instances, more and more money into the task at hand.
And what do you think are some of the factors that drove that shift to looking at parenting as more of a learned skill?
Well, I think there's a number of factors, and all of these factors are discussed in my book. But I think one of the biggest factors is that as parents today, we're looking at a world that our kids are going to inherit that's not necessarily as good as the one that we grew up in and the one that we're currently in. So by that, I mean, kids who are growing up to become adults now are one of the first generations to be expected to make less money than their parents. So there's a shrinking economic pot. We know that our kids are inheriting an earth that is sicker and sicker due to changes in the climate. We know that our kids are entering a country that's really rife with a lot of division, and just the overall outlook does appear to be grimmer. And so what do you do if you're a parent who's raising kids and looking into that future? It seems to put a lot of pressure on parents to try to prepare our kids as best we can for this. And, there are different ways you can prepare kids, but one of the ways that parents have sort of latched onto is to try to cultivate their kids into the best possible versions, or what they think are the best possible versions, the best college entrances, the best resumes, the 20 extracurricular activities, basically saying that by the time they hit, adulthood, I will have done everything I can. They can never blame me for giving them every opportunity to succeed. And that sort of internal pressure that parents are putting on themselves, to me, is a very modern phenomenon. And it's based, I think, on this anxiety about the world that our kids are inheriting.
And I'd imagine that for parents to fully deliver on some of those promises, it takes things like time and money. Is that correct?
It takes time and money, and it takes exorbitant amounts of each. So one of the statistics that I cite early in the book, which really astounded me when I first read it, is that a working mother today spends as much time and much more money, even with adjustments for inflation, than a stay-at-home mom did in the 70s in terms of raising kids. And so if you just sort of do the math, especially with the time component of this, the fact that a working mom is giving the exact same amount of hours in raising her kids that a stay-at-home mom did in the 70s, it means that a working mom comes home and basically as soon as she comes home, she's on the clock for a totally new job. And that clock does not stop until the kids leave the house the next day for school, and then mom's back on the clock for her job. So it's basically this idea that parenting is a 24-hour day, 7-day a week, 365-day a year job, where there's no off switch for parents now. And you know, it's why some parents, when I talk to them, say, you know, the weekends are not very restful for me. Like the weekends is just my second job, and it's actually a harder job than my regular job.
We're talking with Dr. Andrew Bomback right now, author of the new book Long Days, Short Years: A Cultural History of Modern Parenting. We're taking your calls, too, at 800-642-1234. Your experiences with parenting, good or bad, your questions for our guest, 800-642-1234. And Dr. Bomback, one of the common questions that parents have been asking themselves for many, many decades is what they can control in their kids' lives and the way they parent them, and what they cannot control. Has our sense of what is under our control for our kids changed a lot over the years, do you think?
Well, it's a really interesting question, because if you look at the general trend of parenting, specifically in this country, every generation of parents is trying to exert more control over their kids than the previous generation. So if you go back to kids who were being raised 200 years ago, they had so much more independence than kids who are being raised now. And even within generations. So, you know, this current generation has a lot less independence than my generation as kids. Parents are, you know, in a position where they really want to control what they think they can control. But interestingly, they don't try to control what they know they can control. So to give an example, going back to the, you know, the earliest parents, the Puritans, you know, their kids were dying of infection, but they actually had no ability to control infection. So what they did was they tried to control morality and sin. So parents in the 70s and 80s, you know, there are things that they were afraid of, you know, nuclear war. They're afraid of the change in the family dynamics with women entering the workspace. So what do they focus on? Well, they focus on preventing kidnappings. They focus on preventing their kids from using drugs, because those are very tangible targets that they can hit. If you go to parents today, as I said, there are a lot of things that are outside of our control. You know, a lot of parents are worried about the way the world is changing. But what do we focus on? Well, we focus on, let's get our kids into the top college, rather than saying, can we get our kids to sort of lead us to a more equal society? To a society that protects the planet better. So again, when you look at parental anxieties and how it fuels their desire for control, there's always a subtext that they're going to try to control what is appearing to be a relatively easy target.
And that's an interesting point you make, that a lot of parenting practices might be driven by parental anxieties rather than what's actually best for the kids.
Yeah, and I think that's always been the case, and it's just gotten more and more pronounced over the last 50 years, because parents in general today are much more anxious than they were, you know, 40, 50 years ago. You can see it just in the dominant parental advice books. So, you know, 50 years ago, the best-selling advice book was Dr. Spock, and Dr. Spock's main message to parents was relax, trust yourself, you know a lot more than you think you do, and trust your instincts. If you look at the dominant themes of today's parenting books, they're almost the exact opposite. They're saying, you're coming to us in crisis, you clearly don't know what you're doing, so forget your instincts, we're going to give you a very detailed plan, even in some cases, a written out script on how to talk to your kids, and this is how you'll get through parenting. So it goes from, 50 years ago, a more relaxed, go with the flow, trust your instincts, to now sort of fueling that anxiety by saying, do the opposite of your instincts. Follow this laid out blueprint in this book that you've just purchased.
Let's go to the calls of the phones now at 800-642-1234. Bill is with us in La Crosse. Hi, Bill.
Hi. I understood your beginning paragraph or two where you said that the future of the children may be more difficult than our times. And I think that's right. And in parents, I see them shielding their kids and making them comfortable and protecting them from all discomfort and problems. While I think the opposite should be, they should be trying to help them learn how to deal with difficulties and discomfort and skin knees and so forth.
Bill, thanks for the call. Dr. Bomback, what do you think about Bill's point about discomfort and its role in parenting?
Yeah, I think Bill's point is really important because, you know, kids are not born being anxious. Kids are not born being scared of some of the things we talked about. They're going to follow the model that their parents set. And if we shield them from these realities, if we try to basically put on blinders to some of these very important issues, we're not doing our role as parents. So our role as parents is to model behaviors. It's our role as parents, as Brené Brown once said, is to be the adults that we want our kids to someday be. And so we are constantly modeling behaviors for our children. And that's probably the most important task of being a parent, is to set that kind of example. And so while, you know, obviously all parents can empathize with this feeling that you want to be protective and secure your kids and make sure they're not hurt, there's a way to keep them safe, but also make sure they're knowledgeable and exposed to so many of these important issues. And there's also a way to model how to respond to those issues. And I think that's sort of what the call is for modern parents now, in terms of showing that example.
We're talking with Dr. Andrew Bomback from the Columbia University Medical Center about his new book, Long Days, Short Years, A Cultural History of Modern Parenting. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you ever sought parenting advice? Where did you look? Who did you turn to? Was that advice helpful? If you have kids, what surprised you the most about the parenting experience, good or bad? What suggestions do you have for new parents? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. The conversation continues coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Dean Kinetter. Right now, we're picking up the conversation with Dr. Andrew Bomback, Associate Professor of Medicine at Columbia University Medical Center. His new book is called Long Days, Short Years, A Cultural History of Modern Parenting. We're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. We'll go next to Joe in Fond du Lac. Hi, Joe.
Yes, my comment is, you know, I think the parents are worse than the children. Just, you know, sometimes turn off Facebook. Don't always worry about what your neighbor is doing. Don't try to keep up with the Joneses. We are parents. Parenting has happened for 30,000 years or 50,000 years or whatever since the cavemen. I think parents just have to chill out, and turn off the electronics, and do what you think is best for your child.
Joe, thanks for the call. And Dr. Bomback, you talk about the issue of screens being a new one in your book. What kind of questions are they bringing up for the way we take care of our kids and for ourselves?
Yeah, I mean, at first I want to just sort of get to something that Joe mentioned, which is that the internet, Facebook, social media really has added a whole new level of pressure for parents, specifically the idea of parent shaming. So there used to be parent shaming for you know, for generations. It's been essentially the parents and the in-laws of the current parents, so the grandparents, giving a little bit of shaming to the parents if they felt like the job wasn't being done perfectly. But now with social media, you can get parent shamed from all directions, from people you've never even met before. And parent shaming comes in very different versions. You know, you can get parent shame directly, saying like, oh, you should never let your kids watch this show, or you should have never let your kids do X, Y, and Z. But you can also get parent shamed on social media by somebody posting what they're doing with their kids and saying, this is the right way to do it. Look how happy my family is, and why are, and the subtext of why aren't you as good as us? So now I feel like parent shaming is coming from all directions, not just in a vertical fashion from the prior generation of parents, but from this intragenerational parent shaming, which is a really new phenomenon that the internet has made particularly hard on parents. And then to your other point, screens are a whole new challenge for parents that this generation is really the first to have to deal with in a pervasive way. Yes, when I grew up, we had screens in terms of televisions, and I know that my parents struggled with how much television my siblings and I consumed, and they worked hard to limit how much TV we were exposed to. But there's so much more than TV now, and kids are basically living in a screen-filled world, basically at every turn. And it goes back to what we talked about earlier in terms of parents as role models. You as a parent are really responsible for modeling for your kids how to responsibly use screens. So it can be something as, you know, basic as anytime we're sitting down for a family meal, dinner or lunch or breakfast, it's a screen-free environment so that we're all connected to each other and we're all present for each other and we can actually communicate without using screens in our peripheries. So that you know, is one very simple way. It can be other things like just setting time limits on screens for your kids. I heard from a parenting coach a great piece of advice, which is you should never let your kids use a screen when they're outdoors so that they know how important it is to be interacting with the outdoor world without a screen in their way. So each group of parents is going to have to figure out how they want to manage screens. But the most important place to start is to be responsible with screens yourself as an adult.
Joe, thanks for that call. Let's go next to Vivian in Green Bay. Vivian, hi.
Parental responsibility for how the children, quote, turn out. My children are fine as adults, but just in their last years, 16, 17 years old, I stopped holding myself accountable for their behaviors because I'd been defeated, sort of, and I decided, okay, I've given them all the skills I can give them, and they make choices too.
Thank you for sharing that. Dr. Bomback, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is this is an interesting phenomenon of parent. I read somewhere that parenting is like the most toxic relationship you can imagine because you spend all this time building up this really intimate relationship where the goal is to get them to break up with you, right? The goal is that by the time they turn 18, 19, 20, they're ready to say, okay, I can do this without you. And so, I think what the caller is saying is really important. Like sometimes success as a parent is to say, I've prepared you for this. You can do it now. I've done everything I can. And now it's your turn to take the lead. And if you've done, the honest job of parenting and really done all the work that you feel like was invested in you to get your kids to that point, you have every right to say that.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We touched a little bit on the online parenting sphere. Some of that is carefully curated social media feeds. Other parts of it are those advice blogs, and that stems from decades of advice, parenting advice being a little industry in its own. How did that rise up, and how has it changed?
Yeah, well, I mean, it starts primarily from the fact that there's a market. So all these books and blogs and podcasts, they wouldn't exist if there wasn't a market of very eager parents to consume these advice resources. And I think one of the big shifts is that we're looking for input on parenting from sources that normally would not be considered traditional experts. So, if you think about who should be giving advice on parenting, the most logical answer is people who were parents. So we should be looking to older generations for their advice. We almost never hear from those sources of information in terms of blogs and books and podcasts. Now it's either parents who are currently parenting, who are right in the thick of things, but we also have neurobiologists, we have game theorists, we have social economists, we have biostatisticians, we have all these outside consultants to the parenting sphere giving their input. And it's sort of, you know, like parenting is this business in distress, and you ask for outside consultants to give advice. To me, it signals that there's this big SOS cry coming up from parents saying, we're desperate for help. We'll look everywhere for help. And to me, I think this deluge of parenting advice can be very reassuring if you find the right piece of advice, but it can be really upsetting to parents if they spend all their time looking and they still haven't found the thing that actually helps their family.
We just have about a minute left. If people are feeling worn down by that competition and like they're not doing it right, what are some things you'd encourage them to keep in mind to stay hopeful?
Well, the first thing I would say is read my book, because one of the reasons why I wrote this book is that I was feeling to some degree worn down and upset about what I was doing as a parent. And that's where I found myself doing a lot of research about this and writing about this. And it helped me to see that I was not alone, and that this is a real trend in parenting, that parents in general are getting more exhausted, more anxious, more stressed out about the job. So I would hope that your listeners can find some solace in what I've written. But I think the biggest message I took from all my work in this, in terms of how I apply it to my own family, is that you have to find resources that actually work for the children in your house. So you can read, you know, all the books in the world, but if they don't actually give advice that you think will work for your kids, don't use them. So once you know your kids really well, you'll be able to say, okay, this book's chapter will work, but these books' other chapters will not work for my kids. And so I recommend trying to pick and choose the ones that you think are actually suited for the people in your family.
And that's all the time we have. Dr. Bomback, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much, and I hope I can connect with your listeners again.
That was Dr. Andrew Bomback, author of the new book, Long Days, Short Years, A Cultural History of Modern Parenting. Stay tuned. This is Central Time.